This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. Michael K is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
This is Robin Roberts, and the Michael K Show starts right now. Take it away, Michael, Don, and Peter.
Thank you, Robin, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this beautiful Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're all apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that is certainly your responsibility. So the Alabama Crimson Tide are the national champions of college football, manhandling Ohio State. Ohio State did not even belong on the same field as Alabama, and some people are saying that this is Alabama's best team ever. Offensively, he's explosive, and it doesn't have an explosive quarterback because Mac Jones, I mean, he was a red shirt and then sat behind Tua, and they had another stud freshman come in. They thought that he was going to start this year, but he won the job, and yesterday put 464 yards on the board, 5 touchdowns. And the other quarterback that every Jet fan was watching was Justin Fields. And as good as he was against Clemson, that's how ordinary he was yesterday. He was just ordinary. And, you know, if I'm Joe Douglas, the general manager of the Jets, I mean, he's got a nice contract, 6 years, good money, the whole deal. But, boy, I don't envy him because he does not have an easy decision. Because if his team had gone 0-16, he had an easy decision. Trevor Lawrence. Even if Trevor Lawrence turned out to be a bust, that's the only decision to make. But now, your pick is going to be scrutinized, analyzed, picked apart. Do they trade it? Do they pick a wide receiver like DeVonta Smith, who had one of the great first halves you've ever seen in a big game? Do they actually go to Justin Fields? Do they go to the kid from BYU? What do they do? There's no open and shut case for the number two pick. And oh, by the way, he has to also pick himself up a head coach. So, I don't know, guys, but Joe Douglas has a lot of work ahead of him.
All I got to say about DeVonta Smith is anybody that tweeted last night, oh, my God, how good is this kid? Oh, my God, the Giants have to trade up to get him. Like Justin Tuck, who I respect, Giants got to trade up to get this kid. Oh, the Jets got to trap. Where were you all year? He's been this good all year long. So it kind of exposed a lot of people in New York, like how invested you are in college football, because – with no hockey, I watched a lot of college football. I mean, nobody thought that kind of first half, but he's been just terrific all year long. But that's where general managers have to figure, does that translate to the NFL? Because when you look at the great wide receivers, not all of them were great in college or had that kind of spectacular championship timber and then converted into it, right? A lot of them were drafted in the middle of the first round and they became super, or came from small colleges like Jerry Rice that you never even saw playing college football and becomes the greatest wide receiver of all time. And with this becoming a video game, guys, how difficult is it to translate what actually is good, or are you just taking advantage of the video game aspect of college football? Because I got news for every one of these offensive players. They're in for a rude awakening when they take on an actual NFL defense. It's a different world than what's happening right now in college football. So that's where Joe Douglas is going to make his money. What translates from college to the NFL?
And I got to tell you, the one thing that jumped out at me, and I'm glad that they interviewed him after the game and he was already out of uniform, he's really small. I mean, coming across the middle, he gets zapped by somebody. Is he going to be able to withstand that kind of heat? Now, wide receivers aren't big in general, but some of the great ones are. Michael Irvin was a big, big wide receiver.
Well, how many times, Peter, do we have a conversation? Who do you take, Julio Jones or Odell Beckham Jr.? And the answer always was, I'll take Jones because he's bigger, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and as great as this guy is, though, the bigger question is, do you take a number two pick and use it on a wide receiver? Now, ironically enough, we have Keyshawn on later, And the Jets took him with the number one pick. But the draft has changed a lot since then. And since we criticized the Giants for taking Saquon with the number two pick, are you going to pay him all that money when he becomes a free agent in 5 years? I just don't know. As Don said, you look at the wide, look at C.D. Lamb, look at Henry Ruggs. They weren't taken in the first five picks. You can go. You should be able to get great wide receivers later on in the draft. And I know this guy could be, you know, he's at a different level, but he's at a level that you're going to take the number two pick. When they say the number two pick in the draft should be a left tackle, it should be a quarterback. They never say it should be a wide receiver.
No.
Even if he's an otherworldly right wide receiver.
Usually you do not do that. But here's the difference between the wide receiver position and the running back position. That when the contract is due, even if Saquon Barkley is the best running back in football, you ask yourself, do I bring him back? Because of the salary cap, can I lay that much money into a running back? But if the wide receiver is the best wide receiver in the NFL, yeah, you're going to give him the money. All right, so that's the difference. I kind of put the wide receiver in the running back category as far as I don't take them that high. But from the financial perspective, Michael, if Devontae Smith, if you draft him at two, and he's the best wide receiver 3-4 years from now, like the best wide receiver, aren't you going to give him the money?
You probably are, but then you're allocating a lot of money to a wide receiver.
But
a lot.
But yeah, it's a lot. But if he turns out to be the best, the question is he going to be the best? As you said, he's not the biggest kid in the world. He comes from a system where they just give birth to points every 2 seconds. But if you think that he's the guy, don't you think that's going to make Sam Darnold better?
Well, then
or whoever your quarterback is down the road.
I guess this just depends on everything, though. Like, what's the direction you're going with this team? How can we really have a reasonable conversation about picking a wide receiver with the number two overall pick when we don't know what the future of their quarterback is?
Well, Peter, they took a wide receiver with the number two pick. Their quarterback is Sam Darnold.
So let's play that game. And do you guys now believe that there's a major change in this offense simply by upgrading to a awesome rookie wide receiver? And how quickly, generally speaking, do young wide receivers make an impact?
Well, C.D. Lamb made an impact this year. Henry Ruggs made an impact. If you're great, you're great. Yeah, you can make a.
How often do we ever say the best wide receiver in the league is in his first or second year?
Not too often.
Always third, fourth, fifth, sixth year you see them at their best.
And the thing is, it's got to translate into wins, right? I mean, that's the thing, is that he could be the best wide receiver, but if you don't put a lot around him, well, he's easy to defend if there's no other weapons on the team, right? Or if you don't believe your quarterback can get him the ball.
Justin Jefferson of the Vikings was just second team all pro. He was just drafted this year.
Second team all pro for that's impressive.
But also for a team that didn't make the playoffs. The thing is, you're trying to build towards a championship, and one weapon's probably not enough. So if you're not really in love with the quarterbacks and you got the second overall pick, do you take the second best player in the draft? Do you take, or that's not a quarterback, do you take Smith? Do you take somebody else? Or do you say, we need a lot, we're trading? I'm trading that pick. If I don't like a quarterback at two, I'm trading the pick. And let there be a team who thinks they're a wide receiver away to trade up and get Smith, or somebody with Fields get him.
But trade that pick to a team that you know wants to take a quarterback, that wants to move up to get Fields. So then, if you get the fourth or fifth pick in the deal, and you hope that Devontae Smith falls to you. Because most teams that are really bad are not a wide receiver away. They're just not. Here's Nick Saban. He said that Devontae Smith is one of a kind.
Well, he's a unique person in the kind of leadership that he has, the kind of competitive spirit he has, and I think Smitty would be successful in any endeavor that he wanted to try, you know, in his life. He's obviously going to have a career as a football player, but I think he created a lot of value for himself by coming back. I think sometimes people don't realize how much value guys create going from the second to, you know, maybe a top 10 pick or whatever, which the way he competed and played this year, and he's the ultimate team guy. I mean, he sets a great example for his teammates. He cares about his teammates, sets a great example for him every day, and I tell you, he's hard to beat. I mean, I just love that guy.
And that's Nick Saban, who's certainly not effusive like that about players, but he does love this player. And, you know, it's funny, fans fall in and out of love in big games. So I fell out of love with Justin Fields in the Big Ten championship game Then I fell back into love with him against Clemson. And last night I fell out of love. Now, John asked a great question to Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas said, you know, we've made our decisions on a player well before that one game. But remember, there's one caveat with Justin Fields yesterday. He was playing hurt. Now, the old Derek Jeter line, if you're on the field, then you have no excuse. He has no excuse, but he does have an excuse. He was playing hurt. If you take a look at the hit that he took against Clemson, most guys would have left the game. Most guys should have left the game. He was not 100%. Ohio State pretty much had like 10 or 14 days between each game that it played this year. They didn't this time. He didn't have a lot of time to heal. So also take a look at that with a little bit of a different eye. But I still don't, as good as he was against Clemson, I'm not sure he's a number two pick. I'm just not sure he is.
But
and that's why what Steve Young said yesterday was so true. If you get a chance to get Deshaun Watson, it doesn't matter if you have the first pick in the draft. You take him over Trevor Lawrence.
But here's why it's silly to start getting giddy off a game is because he got beat by Mac Jones.
Right.
Mac Jones is a junior. Right, is anybody talking about him coming out? Is anybody talking about him being the greatest quarterback, that he's eventually going to become a superstar? Maybe he will. But that's who we got beat by. That's who lit up the scoreboard yesterday. We're not even talking about him. We're talking about his wide receiver. Because it goes beyond how you play in an individual game. It's about everything. It's about the Wonderlic test. It's about the combine. It's about watching how he practices, talking to everybody that he knows. That's what you're drafting. We, as fans, watch the game and go, I love him. I hate him. I love him. I hate him. And then sometimes it's quarter to quarter. Fields is the perfect example. He's played three games. We've had three different opinions on the kid. And the GM that picks him made his decision before the first game. So let's not get caught up in what happened last night. Because the kid that lit up the scoreboard last night's not even in the equation.
That's such an interesting point, Don.
I mean, we really have to look at this and say the future of the Jets lies at the feet of Joe Douglas. If you believe in Joe Douglas, you think he can get done. If you're unsure on Joe Douglas, he could ruin things for the next 10 years. That's how important this is. He's going to hire the coach. He's going to decide what to do with the number two pick in the draft. It's on him. So no matter what he's making, he's either going to earn it or make the Jets look like fools for bringing him in. Joe Douglas, that's the Jets right now. Joe Douglas, how good is this guy? How good of a talent evaluator is he? What's his deal? They bring back Robert Saleh, though, for the first guy to get a second interview, the defensive coordinator from San Francisco. No word yet on whether or not they've contacted Doug Peterson. Again, Joe Douglas has work cut out for him.
Well, if you look at the recent history of the Jets, this is it. Because they don't keep general managers around long, right? Idzik was quick. Maccagnan was quick. If Joe Douglas gets this wrong, the coach wrong, the pick wrong, then what future does he have? He'd be done, right?
Yeah, this is for all the marbles. It really is.
This is what we're going to look back at, right? First of all, the scholarship's over, right? Because now he's entering his second draft, his second free agent class. He's getting a chance to have his fingerprints on the hire of his new head coach. So that's a lot to get wrong. It's a lot to get right, but it's a lot to get wrong. It's hard to not say that the future of Joe Douglas is now, that what he does over the next few months is going to determine not just what kind of general manager he is, whether he continues to be the general manager here.
By the way, I continue to
be... Well, he's a unique person.
Oh, stop. I hit the button the wrong way. Anyway, I continue to be the only member of the show without a podcast. Game Misconduct is back today, Peter. It's back. And you know who's on it today? The great EJ Raddick.
It's hockey, man.
It's hockey, man. The great EJ Raddick.
Yeah. With the great EJ Raddick?
Yeah, that was the first guest.
Wow.
And Don said, don't mock me and don't mock him. The guy is in the know. The people that listen to the podcast love him. I love him.
Peter, did I mock him? Don introduces him to great EJ Raddick, so I just parrot that, and I'm mocking?
I can sense the sarcasm, but whatever. You could do a podcast. I don't know why you don't do a podcast, and don't give me time. You could carve out, Peter, am I wrong, 20, 30 minutes. He loves baseball. He would talk 4 hours baseball after the Super Bowl because he loves baseball so much.
Fair.
I love baseball.
Why couldn't he carve out 20, 25 minutes?
How much money is in it? Nothing.
Well,
that's why.
That's not true. There's money in it. If I want to start like advertising and carve out the time to sell it, but I realize that I can't get my hockey fix on this show. I don't think I get my hockey fix on any show because I got a problem.
I wish you loved the sport like
that. And the way I love hockey is the way you love baseball. So, and the way Peter loves wrestling. So
people don't care enough about me that I need to have a
How dare you say that about you?
And it's also not about you. It's about baseball. And they love your opinion about baseball. There are people that don't care about you personally, but they care about your baseball opinion.
In the words of Don LaGreca, I'm good.
I respect Don for having a place to get his jollies when it comes to hockey.
Why make it sound so cheap and tawdry?
And I also respect Michael, who wants to get paid every time he breathes into a microphone. I respect both.
This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2x London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Picker designed the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2x London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Now, our good friend Trey Wingo, he's doing it the right way. He's got major sponsors.
Well, that's Wingo.
I think he is really pulling in big bucks for his podcast.
Wingo.
There's a lot of things,
big.
Peter, I don't do because I'm just ignorant.
Right.
I don't know how to go about that. I think I can get sponsors for Game Misconduct.
I think you could do it through Cameo.
See, now I think you're mocking him again.
That was a mock.
I think for even a guy that respects, mocking
for a guy that respects money, Peter, he shouldn't be shaming me for Cameo. Because
no.
As Michael loves to say, flush with cash.
But I don't do Cameo, and I love money.
Yeah, because you care what people think too much, man.
I do.
People enjoy hearing what I have to say. I'm not sure why. They do. And, you know, if the pundits out there have a problem with it, then who cares? You're afraid somebody's going to write, oh, Michael Kay's big head on Cameo. All right, fine. I'm sorry. I can't hear you. I'm counting my money. That's the way
point.
You should be.
That's not a bad point.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's
Shall
go
we?
To Chris in Manhattan. Chris, what's up? Start the show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, Michael, Don, and Peter. And I'm a little nervous because I listened to Peter on a different program with
Hot
Ebro.
Hot 97?
So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
sure
I mean, I didn't know if I was supposed
oh,
to
Oh, of course,
it
Ebro
right.
in the
so,
morning, so, yeah.
We don't have a theme song like that.
You don't? You should. Why don't you have a theme song?
Because a good show wouldn't have a theme song like that.
Ebro
in the morning.
I think Imus made a pretty good living with Imus in the morning.
Didn't.
Yeah,
but
he
didn't.
That
but what I called in for specifically is when I turned on the radio, I heard you talking about Devontae Smith at 2.
Mm-hmm.
No.
How come?
One reason. How come? Okay, yeah. First, free agency is going to come before the draft, so I would be trying to pick up a wide receiver in free agency, if possible, something in the area of, say, Kenny Galladay.
What about Juju?
Allen. Oh, no, I don't want the TikTok dancer. I was going to save that for last.
Okay.
he would be if we had to, but I'm good on him.
Oh,
I wanted him
I like
before,
him.
But it would be Galladay, it would be Allen Robinson II, and Corey Davis, okay? So if you pick up your wide receiver there, that's one of the position groups. Peter, you'll like this because I'm looking at Brandon Scherff. You might want to sign him if he hits the free agency market. I'm hope him or Joe Tooney. Okay, I'm looking to upgrade that line. The last one would be Edge. This is all free agency. Matt Judon, say a Trey Hendrickson. Okay, so now I've upgraded those three positions. Most importantly, for whoever my quarterback is. Okay,
so who are you taking it to though? You're solving the world problem. Who are you taking it to?
No. Well, but that's the thing. Now, if I'm taking a quarterback, all right, that solves that, okay? If I am not taking a quarterback, I can either take Penei Sewell and now look at my line. Joe
yeah, but
Tooney.
Here's what worries me about Penei Sewell, okay? Penei Sewell is a left tackle, just like Mekhi Becton.
Yeah.
One of them is going to play right tackle. So you're going to use the number two pick in the draft for a right tackle? I'm not sure I want to go
Trade
that way. As good as Sewell is... You think about it. You're taking a number two pick in the draft for a right tackle. The money is in a left tackle.
Trade it.
So one of those guys is going to be playing out of position.
Yeah, that's an outstanding point. Trade the pick. First of all, you're not signing all those players. I don't care how much money you have. You can't sign all those players, right? Because there's going to be competition for all the players that he mentioned. You're lucky to get a couple of them. So You got to draft, and also you don't build a team through free agency. You build it through the draft. So if you don't like anybody at two, any of the quarterbacks at two, you trade the pick, because there are teams that want a quarterback, desperate for a quarterback. They're going to give you picks, and on top of what you did with Seattle, and you got a bunch of picks, you're in great position. To me, that's more valuable than being, you know, $100 million under the cap. Having those picks.
Let's go to Jay in Newburgh. Jay.
Hey, gentlemen. Yeah, I totally agree with the pick. Why would the Jets invest so much equity in the wide receiver position at number two when the logical play here is to trade the pick and try to, you know, get a, possibly another second rounder? And you can still get offensive linemen down somewhere in the middle of the draft, even in the second round. It seems to be, this draft seems to be top heavy as far as offensive linemen. The Jets just got to stay with the course and, you know, build through the draft. Build through the draft and build the foundation, and hopefully when they get to the point where they're able to pick up some good free agents to help, they'll do it.
Well, here's the problem, though. I wouldn't trade that number two pick for a first rounder and a second rounder. I want a little bit more than that. If somebody's going to go up and get their quarterback that they think is their quarterback for the future, I'm going to really make them pay. Really make them pay. And he made a pretty good deal with Seattle for Jamal Adams. So let's see if he can squeeze. I think, Don, if you're going to trade the number two pick, you've got to get a pick in the top 10 back and something else. Maybe a first rounder next year. That might be a bit much, but you've got to get a lot more equity, because you can't drop to the bottom of the first round for that trade. That doesn't do a good job.
And I don't want to bash Jamal, because we know how good a player he is. But that deal didn't work out for Seattle, because he ended up getting hurt. They get bounced in the first round. They're going to have to pay him, and now they don't have a first-round pick.
And also, it kind of uncut when you watch Jamal Adams, right? He's a safety that can't cover. The brains of Jamal Adams as he gets to the quarterback, he's almost like a hybrid linebacker. Yeah. But when you see him in space covering people, not a good job.
But honestly, the best move that he ever made was trading Adams. The Jets won that deal. Hands down, they won that deal.
Right.
Now, the Seattle's thinking, we're going to win a Super Bowl and it's not going to matter. Well, they didn't get out of the first round. And now, what are you giving them? Now you got to pay them, because now you make the deal worse if he leaves. So what kind of damage is that going to do?
Now, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. The Kyrie Irving situation continues to get more weird as the hours pass.
Really?
And the Nets are in a position where they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. They are really in the most unenviable position that you could possibly be in, and we'll detail why as we move along a little bit later on. We'll continue to take phone calls, baseball, an internal memo to all the teams. Rob Manfred has said, report to spring training in the middle of February. We're going to play a 162-game season. I'm shocked. But we'll talk about that as well. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg with you right here on the Flamethrower 98.7 ESPN. I am going to write a song for Ebro. Show of that stature has to have a song. We have a song.
Yeah, I hate the song. I feel it needs an update.
Listen, I love Joey. That's more just like irony, just kind of throwback. It's not good.
Oh, well, I'm going to tell Joey you said
that. I got to tell you, Don, that's a monster
take. Joey understands that it's kind of a hokey little kind of spin-off of, which was also not a very good song. The Mike and the Mad Dog song wasn't very good. The original one, going at it as hard as they can.
They were.
No, I'm not doubting that, but it wasn't like anything that made you want to like get excited. It served its purpose.
No, but when you heard that song, you knew it was time.
It's not good. It's just a throwback. Nobody's, if they're humming the song, they want it out of their head immediately.
Right. It's not like a good theme song.
E-B-R-O in the morning. E-B-R-O in the morning. That works. All right, let's go back to the phone.
It works to clear a room.
I think Ebro will like it.
We'll take it under advisement.
Go to Chris in Long Island. Chris.
Hey, guys. The funny thing about the Mike and the Mad Dog song was nothing could get by him. Turn it on and try him. You know how many things I slipped by Mad Dog in his lifetime? I used to throw past him.
Oh, that's funny.
We're not here to poke fun, but a good line.
That's a good line.
No, I know. And Michael, another thing. I used to call you 40 years ago, WFUV.
One-on-one?
Big time. Big time.
Oh, what was the topic of conversation?
Barbara Sterner, he was the guy.
Well, like, all right,
Don, you know what was big back then? Big. Rangers Islanders, 1980, 79, 80. Forget about it. Mr. Islander.
That's
Mr.
right.
Islander
that, Mr. Islander would call in, yep.
But, you know, I don't think Michael was giving you much on that, but there's a January 12th, 1981. What do you think Michael's open was?
I don't know. What
January 12th, 1981. It was, well, the one-on-one had its own song, its own theme song. That was Come On. So, and then following
the Happy
Michael,
Organ by
Man,
Dave Baby Cortez.
Right, the Happy Organ. Right. And after you was Rich Mandrake Kirby, I remember. Rock Block.
Wow,
I used to listen to him after that.
Wow. Very cool. Well, what do you have now?
All right. Listen, I think watching last night's game, I don't know if general managers think the way I'm thinking, but I think that really hurt Fields' stature, and it hurt the Jets, because do you think people are now clamoring to get at that number two pick to get Fields, or did he fall into the category back with Wilson and who's the other quarterback? What's his name? The guy from North Dakota State, that guy.
I forget his name.
He's a
Trey Lance.
Top 10 quarterback.
Trey Lance.
Right, Lance, exactly. Did Fields fall back with those guys? Is there more of a separation?
Here's the only
now?
Way, Chris. I don't think the NFL looks at it like we do. They've got a dossier on guys. I don't think that moved the needle that much. That much. Now, speaking of Mike and Chris, you know how I love Chris, right?
Yeah,
Chris,
I do
friend
too.
Of the show. You got to hear the clip of him talking about the kids broadcast on Nickelodeon.
Over 2 million people watch, by the
amazing.
Way.
Amazing. And that means they're going to do it again, and other sports should copy it. I'm telling you, maybe Anthony could dig it up. It's definitely on Twitter. He takes 3 stabs at saying Nickelodeon. Didn't come close. You have it right now, Anthony? All right, listen to this. Don and Peter, listen to Chris.
Anybody who's watching that Nickelodeon for the game needs their head examined. The girl, when the Bear dropped the touchdown in the end zone, said, oh, almost. This is the NFL. Almost. I mean, that's not the response you want. That Nickelodeon thing I could not get into. Oh, go ahead. What else?
God love him. Okay.
He couldn't say Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon is not something that's unknown. Even, I mean, come on, he had kids.
And also, that's not what it's an NFL game. Well, the NFL game, if you're a real NFL fan, you're watching CBS.
But I guess he didn't realize
Nickelodeon or Nickelodeon is it's for kids.
I'm at a loss right now. Like, number one, Chris had children, correct?
Yes.
He has 4 kids, yeah.
Four. Did he? And he knew them.
Yes, he did know his kids.
And he never heard the word Nickelodeon before. Nickelodeon?
He said 3 times. He took 3 shots.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't even close. He wasn't even close. And also, listen, if you want to make fun of the whole thing, like, listen, I'm all for it, and I don't have a problem even making fun of kids. I'm good. You go on TV, I'm fine to make fun of you. I'm fine. But let's all recognize what the purpose of that was, you know? Like,
it wasn't
like
John Madden on Nickelodeon.
Right. That was the point, was that you were having it from a kid's lens. Oh, Nickelodeon.
See, that's the point. I'm not going to make fun of him not being able to say it. Everybody's got their affliction, right? With
not us. The 3 of us never make mistakes.
I cannot say that, no.
Right.
Nickelodeon.
So he obviously, there's something there, okay? Or not there. But to have you're going to actually critique it like it's an actual NFL broadcast? It was set for kids like 12 years old to watch. And that's the way 12-year-olds talk. It's a great idea. Now, for me as a kid, I didn't want that. I wanted to watch the game with my dad. I wanted to learn the game. And I didn't want to feel like I wanted to be talked to like a kid. But in this generation, some kids don't have dads to teach them the game. Right? And stuff like this might win over some kids and they might enjoy it. You're not going to break it. Really, he broke it down like you're breaking down Tony Romo calling a game or breaking it down like the average play-by-play person. Give me a break. Come now, on, Chris, come back to us.
Did you guys see former Texans great receiver Andre Johnson? He destroys the organization and says Deshaun Watson should stand his ground and demand to get out of there. They ruin great players. And then that was a tweet 33 minutes ago by Andre Johnson. And just now DeAndre Hopkins, who's the guy who got traded to the Cardinals, subtweeting goes, when Dre speaks, listen, there's a chance they might be forced to trade this guy.
How much?
And then that second pick takes on a whole different feel to it. But now, the thing that hurts the Jets is they could trade for the number 3 pick from Miami and Tua. So they have Tua and they would have Devontae Smith if they traded DeAndre Hopkins to if they trade DeAndre Watson to the Dolphins, then they would have Tua and they would have Devontae Smith. Now it's not obviously DeAndre, it's not Deshaun Watson, but it's pretty darn good.
Now, was it one guy destroying the organization or is the whole organization destroyed? Because it was a bad general manager, and they got rid of him.
Yeah, they're killing Jack Easterby.
And you wonder how much of this, because there's also the rumblings of this being political because of the owner's leanings. Like, is that part of it, too, where they just everybody's jumping on him? If that's the case, then what are you going to do?
Let's go to Theo and Bethpage. Theo.
Hey.
Hey.
Hello?
Hello.
Mike, Don, Peter, thank you very much for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Michael, I don't know if you remember. You probably don't. I met you 10 years ago in Penn Station, okay? And you were coming down the escalator. I was coming up the escalator. And, you know, I didn't want to give you away because you're such a rock star.
Yeah.
Okay? So I just, like, I mentioned to you, like, hey, do you remember me?
Yeah, I definitely do. It's very clear. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you do.
Yes, absolutely. Anyway. So what do you have, Theo?
Anyway, you know, I called. I was waiting on hold for you guys. Mm-hmm. And then you guys didn't take me, so I ended up speaking to Chris Carlin. And, you know, we spoke about Sam Darnold. Now, listen.
Oh, no.
I don't know who's been, like, giving up on Sam Darnold. But why? I told him about trading back. This is at the time when the Jets were entertaining the first overall pick. Okay? Because I got to be honest with you. I'm not completely convinced that Trevor Lawrence is this worldly quarterback like Andrew Luck. So, you know, I told Chris Carlin, I was like, why wouldn't you trade back for multiple picks? And this is exactly what we're talking about now. The Jets have so many more problems than the quarterback.
Yeah, but Theo, that's the key. That's the key. How much of a problem is Sam? Is he a problem or is he the solution? So I would disagree if they had the number one pick and traded back. That's kind of a fireable offense. That's how well-regarded Lawrence is. The number two pick, that's why we said there's a lot of heat on Joe Douglas, because how do you handle this? There's no wheel slam dunk way to handle it. Even if the guy becomes a bust, the number one pick is Trevor Lawrence, period. Period. That's all there is to it. That's the number one pick. That's who the Jaguars will take. The number two pick, there's so many variants of what you can do. So many. And so many things could go wrong. So he is going to be scrutinized, analyzed. This is going to be the defining pick of Joe Douglas's career. This is it. because there's so many things that could go wrong. There's no clear-cut pick. None. There's no clear-cut handbook way to do things.
It depends. He might be absolutely in love over the moon for Fields. And it's obvious to him. It's not obvious to us because we don't know, but he told us that they already know who how good a quarterback is. He's not living and dying with what happened last night. So what if he's convinced that he's the guy? Then to me, I guess that's where you go, right?
I guess, but again, it's second-guessable because there would be people out there that would say, I don't like Fields that much. So if he has a conviction in Fields and takes him, it better work out. There's so many, it better work out with whatever he does with this pick.
But wouldn't you say
because even if you take Trevor Lawrence and he doesn't work out, you can't be second-guessed. That's the pick.
Well, I don't think you worry about being second.
That's the pick in number two.
I don't think you worry about being second-guessed as much as not going with your gut. If you believe that Justin Fields is the guy, then you have to take him. All right, forget about being bashed or how it works out. Like, you don't want him to become the next Tom Brady, and you wanted him, but you didn't pick him because you were afraid you'd be second-guessed.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if you took Trevor Lawrence and he was a bust, you could survive career-wise. If you take Justin Fields, even if you believe in him and he's a bust, it's hard to like survive then. Because I don't know what I'm saying. It's not a universal pick. You're right, Don. You have to go with the guy you believe in, but it better work. Trevor Lawrence doesn't have to work for your career not to end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But because fallback. There's a lot of fallback opportunities for coaches and managers that they can always go, well, that's what the book says to do. The book says to take Trevor Lawrence. There's no book on this number two pick this year.
Right.
There's none.
But remember, he's not only being judged by that, he's being judged on who the next coach is going to be.
Yep. Oh, he's got a lot on his plate.
If he fails with a second overall pick, that's bad. But if he gets the coach right, then you can get up. He can't survive both of them being wrong. Right? So
probably the most important one is the coach.
Yeah, because I don't believe, especially now with Trevor Lawrence off the table, although I still think he could be breakable, is that whoever you take it to isn't going to single-handedly lift you to a Super Bowl if you don't have a good coach. He's got to get
though,
the coach right.
It looks like the Jaguars are going to hire Urban Meyer. And Urban Meyer goes, I got to have the Ohio State quarterback. And then Trevor Lawrence just falls in their lap. I don't think that's going to happen, but you can dream. The connection, the Ohio State connection. 1-800-919-3776. More of your phone calls. We'll get to the Kyrie Irving stuff as well. It's Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
How about this? Aaron Rodgers, after the playoffs are over, is going to be one of the guest hosts of Jeopardy.
Really?
Yep, that's what he told the Pat McAfee show today. He said one of his idols growing up was Alex Trebek. He was actually on the show, so he is going to host it.
I don't see that going well.
Why not?
I love Aaron Rodgers, the football player. Love him. And I think he'd be like a kind of cool dude to meet. I don't find him charismatic in that way.
It's
you
such
find Ken
a
Jennings
unique...
charismatic?
Who's Ken Jennings again?
He's the ultimate. He's the guy who's hosting now. He's the ultimate Jeopardy champion.
It yesterday. He's perfect for it, by the way. There's a certain skill set to being a host in that manner. And so I've seen talented people in other venues try that, and it just does not work. And I don't want to disparage anybody, but you're seeing it now. Like, ABC has really flooded the whole, like, fun and games thing where they're bringing back all the old game shows. Like, Alec Baldwin's perfect for Match Game. It works. It's perfect. But there are guys, it just doesn't work. And they're talented people, but they just don't have the skill set for it. I don't think Aaron Rodgers would have the skill set for that. Doesn't mean he's not smart. Doesn't mean that he's not, camera ready. I don't think he'd have the skill set for that.
Now, Kyrie Irving's skill set is undeniable. Mm-hmm. He can play. But the best ability is availability. Now, I'm not even talking about injuries. This guy just takes off. Did he really need to have his shoulder surgery when he had the shoulder surgery? Just think about all the games that he's been paid for to play for the Brooklyn Nets. I think he's played 27 of them. Played in 20 games last year. And once the shutdown happened on March 11th, he decided, you know, I need shoulder surgery. He didn't play again. Didn't play in the bubble. And came out this year, looked great. And then just decided not to show up. And we still don't know the reason why, although it's been reported that he's upset over what happened in the nation's capital, at the Capitol, on January 6th. Which I think is a somewhat sketchy reason, to be honest with you. We were all unnerved by what happened. And NBA players were unnerved by what happened. And they all went to work because that's their job and that's what they do. And that would be a really good place to actually voice your concerns to a very eager media who wants to hear it and would get it out into the world. He's chosen to just go dark. All right, fine. Now, there's a video that's come out that he was out. Now, the NBA is investigating it because nobody is certain when the video was. But it looks like his sister, celebrating her 30th birthday. Now, his sister's birthday, I think, was yesterday or Sunday. So there's a video of him in a club with a lot of people there, dancing. And even if he decided to come back today, he'd have to sit out for a week because of COVID protocol and contact tracing. Now, when I say the Nets are between the proverbial rock and the hard place, see if you follow me. If they come down hard on this guy and they discipline him, very sensitive, they lost him. Then they risk losing Durant and the rest of the team because teammates will always stick up for the guy. They will always stick up for their teammate, not the man. Now, if they let this go on and they don't discipline him, he'll do it again. And he'll do it again. And he'll do it again because he is a different bird. Now, if he does not come back because of contact tracing and has to sit out a week, he'll miss three games, and then he would not get paid. If you actually go against NBA protocol, which is not to go to clubs and stuff like that, you for every game you lose, 1/72 of your paycheck. I am flabbergasted, everybody, that the Nets continue to pay this guy just cause, simply because he doesn't feel like working. Because of the terrible time that we're going through in the world, he just doesn't feel like working. I said this the other day. I don't feel like working sometimes either. I didn't feel like working that Wednesday when our possible democracy was devolving right in front of my eyes and everybody that was watching. But I worked. You know why? Because I'm supposed to work. And he just decided not to show up, didn't contact his coach. We have not heard from Sean Marks, the GM. We have not heard from Joe Tsai, the owner. And Steve Nash is kind of put in the position, well, it's a private matter. Well, at some point he has to answer for what he's doing. And there has to be a graph somewhere located some NBA statistician's basement or analytic basement where, as great as Kyrie is he worth the trouble? Is the juice worth the squeeze? I don't know. Because if he's going to continue to act like this and just disappear because his head's not in the right space, I don't know if you could do that. Don and Peter, I don't know if you can continue to engage a player like this. And if I'm Kyrie, and I am so devastated over what's happened in our country, then do what Maya Moore did. Walk away. Walk away. Don't play. If you think there are more important things, and there are more important things. There are more important things than sports talk shows. There's more important things than baseball, basketball, football games. There's more important things. And if you want to take that step away so you can concentrate on the ills of the world, then step away. But don't let your teammates and the organization hang. That's exactly what they're doing. They've lost two out of the three games he's missed. He's missing the game tonight. Probably going to not even be here all week. And we get absolute radio silence. Don't know what's going on. All we hear is what's being reported, that it's because of what happened last Wednesday in D.C. I think it's terrible, terrible what he's doing. I hope it's not something else. And that's why when we brought this up the other day, I said we're going to tiptoe around it. But it does look as if he's just disoriented about what happened Wednesday in D.C. I'm sorry, that's not a good enough reason when everybody else in the world went to work.
Right. I got a lot to say, Peter, if you want to go first.
All right. Then you know what, Don? I'll take you up on that.
Okay.
Listen, I'm still with Michael in the sense of trying to live in a spot of not overly judging because we simply don't know, and I don't feel like being that, you know, that sports talk host who roasts someone and then finds out that there something else was going on. But I was just arguing on text with my buddy Kaz, who's doing a great job, by the way, hosting on the new MSG AM show that they've been doing every morning.
Mm-hmm. See, now Kaz is a name I could get behind.
There you go. Kaz is a good guy. Actually, Mike Breen went on the show as a guest recently.
Really?
Oh, it's a good show.
Another good guy.
Yeah, so Kaz and Monica, they're hosting every morning on MSG. And Kaz and I were arguing, though, because he's been defending Kyrie. You know, he says, well, we don't know. Who am I to judge? So family time is very important. And family time is very important. But if we find out it's as simple as he wanted family time when the season just started, there has to be some level of commitment to the basketball team. That's just what teammates are. Every one of us who's ever been a part of any team have sacrificed certain things, certain time with family, with other friends, because we're part of a team that's paying us and we're being relied on to be on that team. So maybe we find out something else and it reshapes everything. But as I've said over and over again, when we hit this subject, the problem is Kyrie has a history. He has a history of not seeming like he really wants to be there. So unfortunately, we end up judging him a little bit more harshly than others who have never done that before. Don, I cede the floor to you.
So many things. First of all, do not read too much into his teammates defending him, because that's what you have to do to try to keep everything together, because they've got to welcome him back. I don't know if KD really feels the way he, you know, outwardly says that we've got his back. I'm sure there's a lot of guys in that room that is disgusted, but making it public's not going to help when he comes back and just making the matter worse, because that's ultimately who's going to have to police him, or his players. I mean, what Steve Nash doesn't have anything. I mean, he got hired by his players, so he's going to have to follow suit. By acquiring him, the Nets have kind of given him this outlet, and they would probably be hypocritical to try to take it away at this point, because that's what they want to do to try to win a championship. That's the price they're willing to pay for that championship. But what I'd ask them is, at what price are you willing to pay for a championship? First of all, you haven't won it yet. It's not even guaranteed. And if you ever do win the championship, I mean, this is just going to further embolden him to pull this garbage. Because if you're going to tell me that he's doing this for political reasons, well, then he should be somewhere in a fetal position drinking bourbon out of a baby bottle. I'd say, you know what? He's a broken individual. But if he's out partying at his sister's birthday, he obviously is just doing this because he doesn't feel like playing. Why do I want to build an organization around a guy that on a whim could just disappear? The only way that's going to work, like it worked in Chicago with Dennis Rodman, is if he is policed by his own teammates. This falls on the shoulders of KD. He is the better player. He has to become the leader of this team. And outwardly, you could say whatever you want to us, but internally, he's got to straighten this out. The organization can't do it. They enabled him. Steve Nash can't do it because, quite frankly, he doesn't have the pelts to do it. But KD does. He's got the championships. He's the better player. Like Steve Young says, they've got to police him. They've got to get him straightened out. Because you can't live this way. This is not going to work. He is going to bring this organization down. And I don't care if he comes back and scores 50. The fact that it can happen again is eventually just going to cripple this organization. So it's on the shoulders of KD. He's got to step up and straighten this out. He has to. Otherwise, it's never going to work.
It just seems, Don, that he's so fragile that if KD even tried it, you could lose him. That's why you're almost paralyzed when you come to an agreement with Kyrie. And I would tell Kyrie, listen, everybody has the right to do what they want to do in life. But you don't have the right to be in the middle. You have to make a decision. Do you want to be part of a team, as Peter said so astutely? Because everybody else depends on you when you're part of a team. If you want to be part of a team, then you're part of a team. You can't just take off when you're not in the right mind space. You can't do that. So walk away from the game, and there is some precedence to this. Right. Maya Moore did it, so walk away.
But Maya Moore is somebody that has conviction. Don't make Kyrie out to be some sort of a hero. He doesn't want to play.
But we don't know that. We don't know that.
We can't know. Yeah.
We can't say that. So if it's all because of what happened in D.C., to me, that's still not enough.
I was
devastated by that. And I worked that day as it was going on. All three of us did.
But as Peter said, there's a history here. Okay? All right? So history is certainly not on his side. And now, while he's, you know, trying to be a patriot over what's happening in our country, you know, now there's evidence that he was at a party. Not masked to the point where he may not be able to play even further. So I understand we're all trying to protect ourselves so we don't have the Duke lacrosse situation. But how much evidence has to build up before we say, you know what, I know there is a possibility that there's something else, but let's not ignore the evidence that's piling up that it's just the fact that this guy, just when he doesn't want to play, he doesn't play.
How many more people
does he have to alienate? One of the best players in the NBA, the best player in the NBA, and one of the best guy human beings on the face of the earth, LeBron James, couldn't get along with the guy. All right? So, and now KD, if KD were to come out and go into the room and say, we're not going to tolerate this behavior, and if the Nets cut him because KD said, this guy doesn't want to play, how many more great players does he have to alienate before everybody wakes up and realizes we can't do it with him anymore? That's
remember
why the
when I was
have to
like
be the ones to step up.
When I was up in the air, you know, would you trade Kyrie for James Harden? Yeah, in a second. In a second. Now, also what he's doing is he's hurting his team's chance to win. Because with the injury to Spencer Dinwiddie, they don't have a point guard other than Caris LeVert. And you could watch when they're playing, they have no backup point guard. So Steve Nash is probably their best backup point guard, is trying everybody. He's leaving them in the lurch. Especially with the Dinwiddie injury. They used to have an embarrassment of riches at that position. Now they don't. Now they have Caris LeVert as long as Kyrie is on this tour of pouting. And if I'm the Nets, I don't want to sit here and be a delegate for misinformation. They got to come up with something that's better than he was upset with what was happening. They got to come up with a lie. They got to come up with this or that, a health issue. This can't stand as, you know, he just doesn't feel like playing because he's emotionally wrought. Sorry,
that's
not good
the weird
enough.
Part. Why are they not able as a franchise to button this up?
Because they're afraid of him. As Don said, they've enabled him.
Well,
he has more power than Sean Marks. The only one that might have more power is KD, but I believe that KD is in Brooklyn because of Kyrie.
I know, but KD's got to step up here. He's the better player. He's got, quite frankly, he's got the better reputation. I mean, he could step. I understand he's got to do what he's got to do from a PR standpoint, back your player, try to keep it together. But internally, he's got to straighten this out. But you do all this stuff. You know, I wouldn't want to lie, Michael, because you'll get caught in the lie and you end up looking worse. They're better off just saying, listen, we know the guy's a flake, but he's our flake, and we think we can win a championship with him, so we're going to live with this. And that's essentially what the Bulls did with Rodman, right? They handle it, let him go to Vegas, because they knew when he came back, he'd play, he'd help him win a championship. And they were able to handle it because they had good guys in that room to be able to make it work until it couldn't work anymore, and then he was gone. So that's what you just do. Hey, listen, he's our flake. We love him. We understand it. He's got a lot going on. But guess what? When he comes back and scores 50, you'll understand why we do this. I'd rather them do that than to come up with some lie that eventually they're going to get caught in. It's a tough spot to be in, but you can kind of control the narrative by just owning the situation. If indeed he is on this team dictating policy because you want to win a championship, then just admit it. Don't lie to me.
There's Jay Williams. He was on with Barton Hahn today, and he talked about the Kyrie situation.
I look at it two ways. I'm like, did Kyrie know that somebody probably took a picture of him? I mean, does he care? I don't know the reasoning. I can assume why Kyrie hasn't played because of things that potentially have happened in our country, and he feels strongly about that if that is the case. So that's one aspect. Maybe he just doesn't care. You know, a lot of this for Kyrie is maybe him say, this is what I'm standing for. These are the principles of my life, and this is what I want to do. So it is what it is. And then there's another part of me that looks at it and I'm like, this also continues to propel the issue, though, right? Like, that's why there's a trust issue with people. That's why there's a trust issue with the media. All these narratives start spinning away and there's a ton of speculation. And look, is a part of that Kyrie's fault? Sure, because he's not the one properly articulating what the reason of him stepping away has been, but it kind of feeds into it. I got to be honest with you, I'm disoriented with this whole thing.
Now, Williams goes on to say that Nash is in a tough spot.
I feel so bad for Steve Nash when Steve Nash has to make comments and says there's an unknown timeline on when Kyrie Irving is going to come back and play. Think about the position that puts him and that puts teammates in each and every day when they're being asked about Kyrie Irving, when the attention isn't focused on, is this team getting better or not? Why is there even a need for that currently happening if you're not saying, this is the reason for me not being here because I want to stand up for this? Now it's speculation, and that's problematic. Well,
I blame the Nets organization for that. As much as I like Sean Marks, it's his responsibility to answer these questions about Kyrie, not Steve Nash. Joe Tsai, the owner, it's his responsibility. This is above the pay grade of a coach. And what Jay Williams is saying is true. Because you're making a coach answer questions that he can't answer. This is something that the front office has to get in front of a Zoom camera and answer questions. And the fact that they haven't, this is an organization that right now is absolutely paralyzed by a situation. They don't know what to do because Steve Nash should not be in front of a camera going, it's a personal issue which I can't get into. That's wrong. It's wrong to the fan base. It's wrong to the teammates that have to answer questions about it. Sean Marks is the head of the organization, is the GM. Joe Tsai is the owner. Get in front of a camera and answer questions. Why is Kyrie not playing?
And whose fault is it about misinformation? Whose fault is it that we're having conversations about what it might be? It's Kyrie's fault for not telling us. You're a public figure. People are going to talk about, people are going to speculate, and that speculation gets fueled by your silence. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and not have an opinion on it because it might be something very serious and then I'm going to look bad. Then let's not talk about it then. But otherwise, if there's no information and it's important enough for it where it has to be speculated about, what else am I supposed to do? Especially when there's evidence pointing to the fact that it is just frivolous, that it is just him feeling like not playing. Why does he deserve the benefit of the doubt? Has he been an angel? Has he been an altar boy when it's come to stuff like this? Or does he not have a history of kind of flaking out at times on his team? So what am I left to do?
No, I hear you.
And here's the other thing that I think the Nets are kind of lucky, that they're the Nets. Because if Kyrie were a Knick, this is all we talk about.
Hey, that's a great, it's a,
if
it's
this,
totally
if you were
true.
A Knick, and again, that's just the rules of engagement. That's just the way that it is. I mean, just it's a fact.
We probably
of life.
Opened the show rather than the college football game.
This would have we would have probably opened yesterday, despite the 6 football games that were played over the weekend. Because the Knicks are a really popular team. They're fortunate they're in the situation right now that they haven't hit that peak yet, where that many people care. Listen, they care more about Kyrie than what it's doing to the Nets. But if this were the if you were on the Knicks, if you were on the Lakers, what do you think the conversation would be, guys?
Now here's Jay Will again talking that this is on Kyrie.
You have to hold him accountable. I mean, nobody can speak for Kyrie Irving but Kyrie Irving. And I think when you go through something like this, I would love to know if there is a principle in which Kyrie Irving is deciding to stay out for. Because if it is, let's bring attention towards it. I think by not saying anything, if the unselfish thing is to say, hey, this is why I'm not playing because I want to bring attention towards this, then you do that. You say what you're bringing attention towards. But it almost seems like it's the reverse. It seems like because he's not coming out and saying, this is why I'm not playing, all the attention then goes on Kyrie, which is not what Kyrie wants in the first place. So I got to be honest with you, man. I got no idea what the hell is going on.
You know what we just heard there, Peter? Hmm. That's Duke on Duke crime. That's very rare.
Very rare. And rarely justified. But in this case, he makes a great point. You're claiming, well, we don't know what he's claiming. In the past, Kyrie has claimed to really want people to discuss the issues. By giving no information, you are the issue. So, listen, I don't want to be just a gas bag. And at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Kyrie has some leg to stand on, man. Kyrie's been annoying over and over again. He's a phenomenal player, and he's an actual nice dude. His lack of understanding of how to control his persona, it's awful. He's terrible at it. His brand management over the last few years in terms of the way people discuss him, and it's like little things. Now, this conversation could all get... Let's suppose, God forbid, it turned out to be something really bad. And we all hope and pray that's not the case, and I don't think it's the case. Would you still look back and think this was the best way to handle it? I still wouldn't. I still wouldn't.
No.
There's no circumstance in which this would really make sense to me or be a good idea. And it's not like I think he's a bad guy for it, but there is a chance this is going to implode the Nets locker room.
Let me just I don't want to say bad guy. That's too strong, but can I say bad teammate? Can I say somebody that doesn't seem like he's particularly dedicated to what he does for a living?
Okay, well, here's what you can say. I won't go as far as bad teammate because we don't know the answer quite yet on that, but here's what I'll say. Bad leader, unquestionably, doesn't know how to lead. This isn't even in the realm of how leading works. I'm sorry.
And I'm sorry. And if it comes down to the fact that he's upset about what's happening in the country, not a good enough reason. Everybody else has gone to work. Everybody goes to work. That's the way the world works. And if you don't want to do it, step away from the game. This way, there's no uncertainty with your team. Step away. I can't play. I can't play through this. I'm going to sit out this year.
But I think there's an answer in between where you just don't feel like you could play, but you don't want to have to give up, you know, doing it for a career. But again, let us know that that's the reason.
Take a leave of absence.
And the other thing, too, what ends up happening here, and this is the shame of it all, what he might be protesting, these are very, very important things. And it shouldn't be used as a get-out-of-jail-free card. All right? If you really care about the issues and you're trying to make a statement, then let us know that statement so some the goodwill can be established, that attention can be brought to the things that you care the most about. What it can't be used for is a way to be able to get out of jail free. Like when he comes back, can't criticize me because the reason I stepped away for a half a dozen games was because of what's happening in D.C. and what happened in Kenosha. Now you're using it. So but if it's a platform, let us know. But it can't be a way of like you can't fault me for what I did because this is the reason I did it. Don't use the topics at hand to try to wiggle your way out of criticism.
But
if you really are dedicated to the cause, let us know and we'll get behind you.
It doesn't quite work though. The pieces don't fit. So you're emotionally distraught over what happened and you can't play. But you could go to a club and dance.
Well, what if the first part's not true? What if he never really did give that as a reason that it's because of, because that's all sourced, right? Like
but we have to know, it's being reported by people that are reputable that this is why Kyrie is out. Well, he has an Instagram account, he has a Twitter account. He could be the narrative. He could solve the narrative. He could set the narrative. Instead, he's completely silent. So he can't blame people for going off the reservation when he's not leading us on a trail. He's not telling us what it is. So we can only assume it has something to do with the unrest in the country. So you're so distraught you can't work, but you go to a club and dance. I don't know. That doesn't fit for me.
Do you guys remember when this whole team came together and we said, man, can you imagine how spectacularly crazy and or bad and or exciting this whole thing could be? We are what, 11 games into the season?
Yeah, 12? 5-6.
Yeah.
We're 5-5.
So we're here already. We're here.
1-800-919. So I don't even have to give the number. The lines are jammed. People want to talk about this. This is a topic that people want to talk about, a topic that doesn't make sense. There's no real sense of, gee, I get that to it. Nobody gets it. Nobody gets it because everybody out there didn't want to work on Wednesday and they did.
Even the people that are defending him are guessing.
Right.
Because everyone's guessing.
Even if you guess that it's something serious and get off his back, man, that's still a guess. Because we don't even know that. We have no information on it.
Hey, he went silent last year with the shoulder injury. We had no idea what was going on. The Nets are beholden to him. He owns them more than Josai does. He owns them. They're afraid of him. Otherwise, they would have said something and they put the hammer down. Get to work or not. You don't allow a guy not to come to work if he's healthy. Sorry. Kevin Durant's there. Caris LeVert is there. Jared Allen is there. Joe Harris is there. What, they don't care about the country? They've all found it within themselves to actually live up to their contract that they made with their team. They can do it. Boy, somewhere Kenny Atkinson is giggling about this. Imagine being in the middle of this, and then you have a neophyte coach, and you mentioned Dennis Rodman before, Don. The guy that led that team was Phil Jackson, who was revered and had rings. This is a neophyte. There's no handbook on how to handle a guy like this.
This is what happens when you let the players run the show. There's got to be some structure.
Well, if you can let a player run the show if it's a responsible player. If it's a guy that's just going to flake out, that's not the guy that you want to run
LeBron
the show.
LeBron can run the show. No problem.
Well, that's why I'm putting this at the feet of KD, because he is a responsible person. He is the better player. His leadership is, I think, really valuable right now. He's got to do the right thing. Because you can't tell me Kyrie can run the show more than KD can.
You have to hold him accountable.
Thank you.
Anyway, we have to break. We're right up against it. We'll come back, take your phone calls. It's Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.